This is Leo. Okay. The Open Ontology Repository session on IPR policy and issues. This is our third session, and it's going to be a panel discussion. We have Peter Yim, who will be presenting a straw man that many in the community have composed. Mike Dean, who will be writing commentary. He's the team lead for the OR system development. Mr. Bruce Perrins, who is the original author of the open source definition, will provide commentary. Mr. James Bryce Clark, the general counsel of OASIS, will provide commentary too. If you look at the slides, it's a PDF. There's background information on slides 2 and 3 and 4. I'll let you look at those yourself. Many of us have been participating in these sessions, and as you'll see on slide 4, this is the third one related to IPR issues for the OOR, the Open Ontology Repository. And slide 6, then, is today's panel, which basically I've provided introductions to these folks for. What we'd like to do now is shift to slide 7 and have Peter go over the current straw man. Just a couple comments just to, so folks can understand the format and objectives of this panel session today. What we'd like to do is arrive at a group consensus at the end. So we're going to go through the panelists' presentations, talk about the straw man, get commentary by some of the folks, and then have a discussion which we hope leads to a group consensus. Okay, at this point, Peter?
Okay. Thank you, Leo. If people would move to slide number 9. Effectively, this is already posted on the session page, and I hope people have had a chance to go through it. This is sort of a collected collected input from the community based on the last couple of sessions and from the advice of the expert panel. And we built out a straw man proposal in terms of our IPR policy that the OOR initiative can adopt. So I will go through them, read through them actually, since this is important, and we might even have to do some words thing after this. And the version again is on the session page along with links, which actually would be more even more helpful than the slides. So if you go to the session page, there's the straw man section, and so on the candidate IPR policy, the first one we are proposing is that software contributions to the OOR effort has to carry a compatible, non-reciprocal gift open source license. And if one is not specified by the contributor, the software license will default to the simplified BSD license, which is equivalent to the free BSD license, and then essentially the BSD license with the third, the non-endorsement clause taken out. We are suggesting that we accept a multitude of compatible open source licenses, which would include but not limited to, let's say, the MIT license, the Apache license version 2.0, Mozilla public license 1.1, Eclipse public license 1.0, and so on. And obviously, it's also acceptable if the software contribution is in the public domain, as is the case on a lot of the government work, at least in the United States. The second major bullet says that any content contribution to OR should specify an IPR license as part of the OR gatekeeping requirements, which will be maintained in the content contribution metadata. Each repository using the OR software can specify its own set of acceptable IPR content licenses. Effectively, this sort of reiterates the Ontology Summit 2008 communique, whereby OR content contribution has to come with a license. And of course, we mentioned that we will default to one if it doesn't come with one, which means it will have one. On this bullet, it's also clear that OR may be running multiple instances. Especially noteworthy is that there may even be non-open ontology repository instances running on the same software, since we are licensing the technology under a gift license. People are actually in position to adopt this technology. So that is the crux of the second bullet. The third bullet says the content essentially ontologies and knowledge organizational structures contributed to the open public instance of OR, which the team will operate, will carry either one of the following: a compatible non-reciprocal gift open source license, and then it defaults to the simplified BSD license, a Creative Commons attribution only license. That's the CC by 3.0 Creative Commons license or its successor, or as before, if the work is already in the public domain, that is acceptable. Effectively, this covers content contribution. However, it's also clearly stipulated, as in the bold type, that this only applies to contributions made to the open public instance of the OOR, remembering that OOR actually is a federated system of repositories, and the OOR team has just committed to stand up at least one public instance of the OOR. So this content license only applies to the open public instance, and it does not govern other private instances or other open instances that the OR team that is not run by not stood up or run by the OR team. So that's essentially the IPR policy proposal, the strawman proposal. And then we have also a couple of position statements that we want to discuss to see if we want to float those and get some community endorsement. So what we're floating is, as a joint community co-organized effort, we are seeking endorsement by individual members of the communities involved, communities meaning all the co-organizers, the communities. The two statements that we are floating are, first, we believe ontologies are fundamental to an enabling interoperability, and therefore we support the position that ontology should not be patentable. The second bullet is slightly wider, or at least address not ontologies but software, saying that we also believe that patents covering software will discourage rather than encourage innovation, and therefore supports the position that software should not be patentable. That's essentially where we stand on the straw man. I will pass to Mike Dean, who will take it from here and address it from software development lead's position, as well as his position as a co-convener of the OR initiative. So, Mike.
Okay. Thank you, Peter. That was a great introduction to the proposal here. I just kind of to reiterate, there were three main bullet points in the proposal that really are addressing two of the major aspects of OR. So the first one basically is covering the source code contributions to the OR software base. The second one really is more imposing some requirements on the software, essentially that they maintain metadata about content contributions. One of the things that I actually meant to do to look at but didn't go back was whether some of the existing vocabularies like OMB actually incorporate that. But that's clearly an important requirement for enforcing offensive IPR policies that are set up by specific instances. And then the third set of bullets basically articulates the specific IPR policy for the sort of the main public OOR instance. Other instances could set up their own policies. So there were some questions that kind of came up, as we were, working on this, and we would like to get some feedback from the experts on the panel. And I think what I'll do is mention all of those questions up front and let them address them in their comments as they fit. So, Peter, do you have a slide for that?
Yes, slide number 13.
Okay. I'll paraphrase some of these a little bit as well. But basically, the first point in the proposal basically emphasized the use of GIF licenses for software, but allowed for the possibility that there could be multiple specific licenses that were used by different software components that were contributed. And one of the questions basically, do the panelists feel that it's viable, really, to allow multiple GIF licenses for software within a single integrated project? Do you know of other projects that do this or what their experience has been with that? The second item was, during the previous panel discussions in the series, it became pretty clear that that it's not clear whether ontologies should be covered by software licenses or content licenses or something else. So what we opted for in the third paragraph basically was to allow submitters to specify either software or content licenses for the ontology. And which was a way of sort of covering all of the bases and allowing what provisions people may have made when they are the organization publishing their policy. So one of the questions I think for the panelists is, is this a reasonable approach to allow a mixture essentially of software and content licenses for the ontology content? The third question really relates more to the second point of the proposal in terms of support for representing IPR policies associated with contributions. Question for the panelists, are aware of any ontologies or other formalizations of IPR rights that the OER software could leverage in that representation? And the final question is basically, what do we miss in coming up with the proposal? That's my set. I look forward to hearing feedback from the other panelists on this topic and others.
Okay, thank you, Mike. Yes, I guess we'd like to invite the panelists now to kind of respond to this set, this straw man that we've presented. Let's see, Bruce, Jamie, John, everyone's present.
John, I don't think it's here yet. John, are you online? Actually, we weren't able to get a confirmation from John, so we might only have Bruce and Jamie on the call.
Bruce, I think you may be muted, so star 3 to unmute. Bruce? Bruce, you're probably on mute right now, so hit star 3 to unmute your...
You're me.
Okay, now we can.
I'm sorry, I had to go on mute and off mute or something.
Okay.
Yeah, we have one problem here with the proposal, and the problem is license combinatorics. So say that we had a collection of ontologies which was under a Creative Commons license and a BSD license, a Mozilla license, etc., and we combine all of those together to use them in one thing. Now, part of the problem here is I'm talking about this as if the licenses are valid, and this is not necessarily true, but we don't know that right now. So we will treat them as we are, lest we violate them in some way. So what we have to do when we combine those licenses is take all of their terms and merge them together and find out what the meta license actually is by combining all of their terms. And they may not even be compatible with each other. And so I very often do this for an open source project. Generally, an open source corporate project will contact me and say, are we in violation? And I have to go through this combinatorial exercise to audit whether they are or not and explain this to their attorney, and this very rarely comes out below $12,000. So I think we're unfortunately making a lot of legal work and raising a barrier to participation by the inclusion of license combination in the repository. Now, this can be addressed to some extent. We can sit down and figure out which of the gift licenses are compatible with each other, and we can say, we'll just use those. The reality may be that there are certain organizations that really have decided we're going to use this license, and it's very hard to get us off it. But in general, compatible gift licenses do the same thing, and thus I feel it's better to just use one. In general, organizations are not averse to contributing under the simplified BSD license, because it doesn't have some of what may be hot buttons for corporations, for example, an explicit patent grant. There is, however, an implicit patent grant in all open source licenses. Since this group has taken a stance that we don't want ontology to be patented anyway, I think that the policy should really be, yes, you're making an implicit patent grant in the license, and unfortunately that's necessary to use the ontologies. What I guess I'm asking for is, if I had my druthers, that you settle on one license. If I don't have my druthers, that you settle on a group of licenses which you have determined in advance are explicitly compatible with each other. That's all I have to say for now.
Okay, thank you, Bruce. Just one question. You're saying that the simplified BSD makes an implicit patent granting assumption?
This goes back to a concept in law called patent exhaustion, and the idea is that if you sell something to someone and it has copyright licenses, other reason that the person's had it, you can't then turn around and say, I'm going to sue the person I've sold it to because they're violating my patent. You have exhausted your right to enforce your patent at that point. And that is generally the case when you grant an open source license. Also, if you look at the text of the BSD license, there is not an explicit statement that this is a copyright license. It just grants some rights to do things. And it can be argued that it is granting not only copyright rights, but patent rights in that regard.
Okay, thank you. Do we want to permit the questions at this point informally, or do we want to continue to have Jamie talk?
Maybe let's hear Jamie out first, and then we could sort of cue everyone up for discussions. Obviously,
okay.
There are already points of contention that we definitely would need to go through.
Okay, Jamie, if you will hit *3 to unmute your line. Jamie, *3.
Coming through okay?
Yes, now you are. Thank you.
Very good. And good day, everybody, whatever time of day it is for you. First of all, I just want to second Bruce's comments. And if we don't do anything today but pay attention to what Bruce said, that would actually get us a long way towards solving our problems. As I posted, with six licenses, all of which have some sort of philosophical relationship to each other, the person who wants to use the material that's in the repository that's under one of the six of them and then combine it with any of the others is basically the small intersection of the sentence of common terms, not the union of those terms, and that can be a problem that snowballs very quickly. Having said that, I have to say I think if you look at the pre-BSD license that's been figured as a default, and if you look at the Creative Commons attribution license, the by license version 3, which has been figured for content, they're actually pretty simple. It's really only a very few number of clauses along in the case of BSD with the sort of disclaimer of warranties that almost anybody who writes executables wants to offer. So if you were working with a small number of works like that, you would be solving your problem pretty quickly. And I think I'd like to reframe Bruce's question as follows. If we're getting a bunch of stuff from folks from the communities like Apache and Eclipse and the European Union, which likes UPL, etc., do we think as a practical matter that it would be likely that we'd have trouble getting somebody who's already gone to the effort to get something under one of those licenses to do the analysis and get it under a second license? In the area of software executables, acknowledge that there's a problem if you composite a lot of different words, because every one of the pieces comes with its own history that way. And sometimes people are inheriting things that include components, and they have no control over the prior licensing of those components. But in content, I wonder if it isn't possible to expect that it'd be pretty easy to get folks to say, well, if I offered it under one of these, I can probably offer it under the other one, too. And to wrap that up, and again, I'm really trying to make sure we focus on Bruce's point before talking about anything else here. To wrap that up, if we went out with a straw man that was much more constrained than this and said something like, everything should be, you know, everything that we're working with in the executables that are available to everybody for the project should be free BSD only, and everything that's contributed to the repository is up to the repository host. But in the case of the repository that the project will host itself, everything has to be under free BSD or Creative Commons attribution only. And if you just went out with that and then said, okay, we've looked at a bunch of other licenses, we think their virtue is interesting, but we'd like to know what the wider community would think if we constrained it down to those two, that straw man would yield some interesting information for us about whether virtuous, cranky people who don't want to, you know, go to that effort to relicense other stuff would say, well, then you can't have my stuff, or, yeah, I can live with that. If, on the other hand, we go out with the current straw man, which says, oh, geez, you can have, you know, pig, cow, goat, sheep, horse, ox, we'll never know if we can get it down to goat and ox. So I like the idea of constraining that list a lot. Having said that, if we go with the larger list, I raised in an email prior to the meeting some other issues, because there are words used in the straw man to say things like other licenses have to be compatible with something. Other licenses have to be non-reciprocal. Other licenses have to have some other characters, but all those words are arguably non-determinant, which means that all I need to do is come along with some piece of executable I want to donate, for that matter, some piece of ontological content, and say, I, in my wisdom, am a better writer than everybody else I've ever met in the industry, so I'm going to create, you know, Clark PL, and I assert that it's compatible with all that stuff. Yeah. Here it is. And I just got past all those filters, arguably. So I'm concerned about the, not just the theoretical issue of people issuing more open type licenses, but about the compatibility issues that multiply combinatorially, as Bruce said. Now, of course, all those issues of vague criteria, like what does compatible mean, what does if mean, what does non-reciprocal mean, go away. You can just figure a couple licenses and say, that's it. And we see if we can sell that. That is most of what I want to convey. I want to convey two other questions, which are parsed out in much more detail in my email, and more detail than you want to hear. And I'm ignoring one other thing specifically. Here's the two questions. Number one, do we need to exclude non-assertions? If somebody does public domain mean I price state that it's out there for the world and I have no conditions? Or does public domain allow somebody to say, I may have rights to read on this thing, but everyone's free to use it nevertheless? Or everybody's free to use it for purposes of any use within the OOR repository or something like that. And I could imagine grants of that kind, which are technically non-assertions, in which some people turn out licenses, which gets you to where you want to go without either being, quote, a license, close quote, or, quote, public domain, close quote. And I'm not sure we want to exclude that. Second point, I'm not that convinced that we have to touch the third rail of defining content versus software executable. If you constrain the license down to a reasonable smaller number, then you don't have to, you know, the only purpose that distinction is serving right now in the straw man is it allows us to say, for content, we're going to allow CC attribution, and for software, for now. You know, there's all sorts of weird things out there that may or may not constitute executables or be implemented or be run or you know, who, I didn't, you want to, we just put the rest of our lives on the software versus content line. I'm not sure you need to do that. I think you need to specify a couple licenses that will work, and you let the offerer decide whether they want to invoke exploring is this second fork of the discussion that's been posted about whether this group should be involved with policy positions. Maybe we'll get to that today, in which case I have some thoughts to share. But we're talking right now about the licensure issues, so I'm going to confine myself to that. And with that, I think I'm under my time limit, and I'm done. Thanks very much.
Hi, can I say something? This is Bruce.
Sure, go ahead, Bruce.
Okay, I don't think we have to argue about whether ontology is content or program, but I think we do have to establish that there are certain characteristics of programs that we want to be able to exercise with ontologies that we don't necessarily have to exercise with content. And mostly this has to do with running it in programs and combining them together in ways that make some working object, where I would assume their software and their ontologies, and the software do actually execute the ontologies on other content in some way. So I think we do, unfortunately, need some of the characteristics of software licenses. This is not to say that the Creative Commons license proposed does not allow those characteristics. It's just that we have to look at every license carefully and make sure it allows us to actually run an ontology in some way. That's all. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Actually, just a quick clarification, Jamie, your first question, you said to exclude non-assertions, and I don't quite know what that means, that we should not refer to public domain or reuse issues.
Off the top of my head, there's a number of practices in our industry where various entities will no longer issue a license, which has more of the character of a written document, but rather will simply issue a statement that, we may have rights that read on blah thing, and we hereby notify you, the public, that if you're using blah thing, we will not assert any of those rights. So they're not trying to do a patent search. They're not trying to they're basically trying to create a comfort zone for uses by a statement and an agreement not to do anything that is for the benefit of the public. But this doesn't constitute essentially a total waiver of all their rights for other purposes. That's what a non-assert is. To write something on the fly here would require perhaps more than the 24 hours I've had since I saw this and the 2 hours on this call today. I'm just saying, I don't know if your language right now, which says license to the public domain, would permit the offering of adequate access to the public via a non-assert.
Okay. Yeah, we're not probably sure yet. I guess what I'd like to do is open the discussion to all. Peter, there's a number of issues, and perhaps folks should weigh in.
Right. I guess the best thing to do now is for those who would like to make a remark to press the hand button. That way we can line people up, queue people up, and go through issues one by one. Past that, I still hope we can save some time on wordsmithing, at least the easy ones. I just heard Jamie said it's more than a two-hour thing, but let's see what we can do. So please press the hand button if you would like to make comments. All right. Since I have my hand up already, I will start. I thank Bruce and Jamie for pointing out exactly where Mike, Leo, and myself were uncomfortable with But, I mean, what actually did go into the straw man, the part about having a default license but accepting multiple licenses. I'll give you the, give maybe everyone a rationale behind that. First of all, it's the collective input from the community that says, let's try to keep it as free, as open as we possibly can. I think, I mean, that was great. The heart is there, I mean, with this community. But then once we start talking on legal terms, we start getting in trouble. That's where we got the simplified BSD license as the default. But if we state just simplified BSD, what happens? I mean, for example, the OR code base is now donated by NCBO, mainly developed by the standard people under a Mozilla public license. Does that mean we don't have a code base anymore? Does that mean we will have to go to Mozilla? Does that mean we'll have to wait, even if Stanford or if NCBO is willing to go through the process of dual licensing their work and allowing us to do simplified BSD, if there is a process, and I'm sure it's more than 24 hours and more than 2 hours to get it through. I mean, it's unfortunate that that Mark Newsom is not on this call, but even if he is, I mean, I tried to Mark, and he responded to me saying that he's in Geneva. Let's talk when he gets back. If he is back here and at this session, I doubt if he can say, "Oh, all right, I mean, let's also license that to you under free BSD or simplified BSD." I mean, this reminds me of a simple a situation we ran into on the Cuomo's technical committee with Oasis. I mean, we had people contributing, let's say, from NASA, from the European Space Agency, and so on to that work. But once we started the TC, we need everyone to be members. And guess what? I mean, the people who were contributing are, let's say, engineering-type people. And guess what? I mean, it's not an engineering-type person that who can go to the European Space Agency and get them to sign up as, for example, an Oasis member overnight. I mean, the process may take 2 years, by which time even the Cuomo's work might have already finished. And that's why we, in the straw man, we actually listed multiple non-reciprocal open source licenses in the that at least the combinatorics will not be overly insurmountable if someone really has to do in the future. But at least it allows us to have a starting point, have some contribution. I mean, we know for sure there will be people who, for example, Cameron Ross from Cogiware, is going to do that. Is doing their work as under the Eclipse environment. And if we say we can't accept Eclipse, or we will have to wait till you also dual license your Eclipse EPL work to FreeBSD, there will be another process. So that's what is troubling us, and we think that's the sort of less of two evils. We may be wrong, but if this group can come up with something that is helpful, that definitely would be ideal. I mean, at this session or within the next week or so, because we actually did say we're trying to float this to the mailing list, allowing the Y before we draw up the consensus.
Hi, Peter.
All right. That's all I want to say, at least on this point. I have a couple of more points that I hope to hear some response to
this. Looks like Bruce is online to ask next.
Yeah, okay. Peter, is this Stanford contribution software or ontology?
No, this is regarding software, not ontology. And I haven't even gone into ontology yet.
I think we have two problems here, and one is coming up with a body of software that all works together and establishing a contribution policy for that software, and the other one is coming up with a policy for ontologies that go in the repository.
Let's hold off on the ontology, because the ontology part, which is the second part of our straw man, effectively only puts constraint on things that are submitted to the open instance. Now, assuming that there will be 100 different instances of the software, we are only talking about one particular instance that the team members will run. There will be many other instances which will not be governed by the requirement for a CC attribution-only license, although they will be governed by the requirement that they have to carry a license of some sort, which needs to be maintained in the metadata repository, metadata registry.
Okay.
But let's put that aside. I mean, let's talk only on software contribution.
All right. So on software contribution, we can take multiple licenses in the software if we establish that each of the licenses are compatible with each other, and we have to establish that every time someone walks up to us with a new license on a contribution, which means that there's a legal function. As far as on Creative Commons versus software licenses, I actually have a problem about the attribution-only license in that I'm not sure the same patent grant that applies to open source licenses actually applies to a content license the content license does not imply that there is something that can be executed as a process. So there's potentially a little legal analysis to be done there.
Okay, so let's put off the content only discussion and focus on either the software or the executable ontology side of things.
All right. Well, then, Peter, you have to lay out what licenses you have now and determine if they all work together right today. And I think once you do that, that gives you some idea of what you want to accept.
Okay. I mean, that's our first level of analysis, is that let's restrict to non-reciprocal gift open source licenses, and we have listed them. I mean, simplified BSDs, free BSD, MIT, Apache 2.0, MPL 1.1, and EPL 1.0.
Yeah, I'd have to sit down with a lawyer just to assert to you that all of those are cool to use together.
Yes. One other thing, though. I mean,
the question would then be, if you have multiple licenses, you have to look at the intersection of those?
You do. You have to make sure that none of the terms are incompatible with each other. You have to lay out every term in every license and then see if there are terms in other licenses that require you to do or not do things in ways not permitted by the other terms. It's a legal problem. We have some simple rules, like we understand that BSD is compatible with almost everything. But the set that you laid out already makes me think I'm not going to say okay unless I take a look at this in greater detail and discuss it with an attorney.
I totally agree with, concur with you. To make things slightly simpler, actually, it's not really that bad. In effect, one, I mean, architecturally, one would probably be designing the software or the entire system so that it's fairly modular. And assuming user or people who are going to use that software would be using, let's say, a big chunk with a few of the services, then they are only they only have to address the few modules or the few pieces where different licenses occur. And assuming most people, I mean, we will still continue, obviously, to nudge everyone who makes a contribution to go to Simplified BSD, even if they started out not being that.
Right.
Which means in the long run, we will get everyone over to Simplified.
For everyone in that they have to perform this analysis potentially. It's not so bad if they're just using it, but once they're more than users, it's a problem. I also want to bring up that the big decision point in combinatorics is this creating a derivative work by combining different pieces together, or is this just aggregation? So stuff that's just on the same disk and is used separately is not the problem that software which is actually combined and runs as one program is. And I believe we've been holding Adam there with his hands up for a while, so maybe we should give him a chance to talk.
Okay, yes. We'll come back to that question. I think that's important, too. Adam? Star 3? Adam, star 3, you may have to toggle more than once if there's some difficulty.
Okay, I think I'm here now.
Okay, hi.
Sorry about that. So if folks will permit me, let me just attempt 2 points of summary and then an assertion that I'll make on top of that. So what I'm hearing is an acknowledgement, one, that retroactive license changing is generally not possible or practical in many cases, and that's certainly true in my case. Summary point two, what I'm hearing is that determining the compatibility, the actual, you know, down to the details, legal compatibility between more than two licenses or maybe even just two licenses is hard, therefore costly and time-consuming. And so that leaves me to an assertion that I think we're actually going about this backwards, because any decision that's going to be made about what licenses to use, since we can't allow, obviously, all licenses, is going to greatly constrain the space of products that get contributed. So wouldn't it be better to look at this the other way around and say, here are a few products that actually are reasonable candidates for being the foundation, for being part of the OOR, and then go backwards the other direction and try to say, okay, how do we create some legal compatibility between those products so that they can contribute? Because the other way, the way that we're going, basically, is making a sort of a legal decision that seems to me in a vacuum that's just going to wind up by fiat excluding things that could conceivably be a useful foundation for the OOR.
Okay. Thank you. That's a good point. Does anyone want to respond to that? Peter, your hand is up.
Yes, I would want to respond in knowing that Adam has created his open source work under GPL. And I would say, I mean, first of all, the reason why we left it as open as we can is that so that we could work with as many people as we can. Whether or not, I mean, they are part of the OOR teamwork, that does not preclude their interoperating with the OOR work. Let's separate. I mean, it's not that if one is not carrying this license, it won't work. Actually, it's the other way around. The fact that we've made it the OOR work into simplified ESD allows it to work with everybody else. I mean, allows people to even bring this into proprietary software and make $1 billion off it without having to ask the OOR team.
Yes, so, it allows you to push the OOR out, but it doesn't allow other people to push software into the OOR. That's the issue.
Because and then we, once you push your reciprocal, once not you, but anyone, and it pushes a reciprocal licensed piece into OOR, the entire OOR becomes reciprocal and it won't be available to people who doesn't want to work with reciprocal license anymore.
Right. So all I'm saying is that I think, you know, as a result, we're going about this backwards. You know, if you're making that decision, you are, in fact, excluding a lot of products that, for technical reasons, might very well be a useful foundation for the OOR. And so I think you want to make that technical decision first and say, okay, you know, this is such a big issue that we are going to exclude those various pieces of software. All right, now let's figure out how to create a legal framework that supports the pieces of software that really do want to include. Otherwise, you're just kind of punting the issue and doing it backwards, I'd say.
I hear what you say, and I will only have to agree that we disagree.
Why? I don't understand what you're disagreeing with.
No, I'm disagreeing that we should sort of decide on the technical and then build a legal framework. I think we should look at the strategic position of what we want OR to be and then decide on the legal frame and a technical framework that help us get as far as we could with that vision and mission.
Well, okay, then just at least admit that by making this decision in that order, you are effectively making it impossible for a number of people, maybe myself, maybe not, depending upon how it works out, making it impossible for a number of people with existing products to contribute by virtue of the license or set of licenses that you decide on in advance of making that technical determination.
Granted, yes. I mean, I totally admit, I mean, that compromise comes from allowing the OOR to have a much wider reach than if we were to set it to just open source, viral, or reciprocal, or gift.
Okay, yeah, we don't disagree then.
We don't disagree.
I mean, we agree on the intellectual framework here.
Sorry, Bruce, I know viral is pejorative.
It looks like Jamie's hand is raised. Jamie?
Am I coming through?
Yes.
Okay. Here, let's use Occam's razor on this a little bit. Comparing my own time on software, there's two competing hypotheses here. Okay. One is, we think we know something about the 80-20 version of what it's going to take for software to manipulate ontological material. And we have some good stuff, sitting in Stanford or elsewhere that we think we might want to use. And our alpha design here for lawyering should be to have the lawyers get the law the heck out of the way and make sure that stuff can be used. In which case, if you believe that, then we should start with, okay, under what licenses is that stuff currently burdened? And you do exactly what Bruce was describing. You do your analysis starting from there. Now, on the other hand, our working hypothesis is there are all sorts of strange and wonderful transforms and operations and but there could be other people come along with some kind of cross-functionality or backup or substitute, or bus that's going to be better, and we don't know under what regime those things are currently offered. So we can't safely go down the road of saying, let's just go with, let's make the easy decision. So let me just put it back in the room. Which of those things do we think is the case? Do we think we have a good set of 80-20 tools already identified that we want to get started on, with realizing that that might take us down a road later that might exclude some other material not yet invented or not yet identified? Or do we think we better not do that, and are we willing to exclude material in order to make that to cast a broader net for the executables?
This is Leo. That's a good question. Perhaps others will want to comment on that. I would say that we probably don't know yet the contributions that we could receive. Whether we do know of 80%, I don't think that's the case at this point. But I'm open to a discussion on this. Let's see. I see Adam and Jamie are still have their hands raised. I don't know if they're the same hands. Adam, did you have a comment?
No, I'm done.
Okay. And Jamie, you just spoke. Does anyone have a comment concerning what Jamie just stated?
By the way, Adam, if you click the hand button again, it toggles your hand. Got it. Peter here to answer Jamie on the Occam's razor. We do have contributions coming from Mozilla, MPL, and that is the standard work. And for sure, we know Cameron, who is going to contribute to the Common Logic back-end work in combination with teaming up with the University of Toronto people are planning to do their work in the Eclipse environment. So at least we know those two. And the third thing is, we know we wanted to go as simple as we can. And I guess most, if not all of us, will agree here that simplified BSD is as simple as we can get it to. So yeah, at least tossing around these three. I threw in MIT and Apache because we talked about Apache back in 2008 at the summit. That's why I included it. And MIT, if I learned correctly from Bruce, that MIT is simple enough and is almost close enough to simplify. And that's why, that's how that list is made up. Does that cover 80%? I would say so. It doesn't cover, Adam Peace's work, nor anyone who plans to, or who continue to work with, the GNU General Public License. Definitely not. But the way that we hope we will design the OOR environment or that system would allow work to allow it to work with people who are doing GPL, LGPL, or as I mentioned before, even proprietary work.
Peter, may I respond?
Yes.
It's Jenny. You know what? I think we need to not confuse the Boston with the King here.
Jenny, can you speak up a little bit?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Cut.
Oh, that's great. Yes.
I think we need to not confuse the Boston with the King here, okay? they will necessarily do so according to a federation protocol, which is a light outside the firewall transactional set of behaviors. Those will not specify all these details of what sort of software is handling at each time. We're only talking about software to the extent that you want an alpha installation of a repository in the hands of the instigator group to demonstrate it. And others might or might not use that software. They might use something totally different. Their ability to use the one you give them will be constrained only by that, you know, let's say that sentence over again. Their ability to share with you will be constrained only by the content license, not by the software license. And they can choose whether to build their own, choose yours, emulate it, or take or not take the license condition. So I think we might be worried too much about the software license. Let me restate what I said. If you think you've got a good candidate set of software, and there's a short set of licenses that you can clearly describe to give people who want to mash up on it or add it some room to play with it, then the fact that it doesn't allow every other piece of work that might go into your alpha actually isn't that big a concern for your goals. If somebody else has, for example, a GPL piece they want to use, it's a GPL ontology walking or crunching tool, and they find that you've set a condition because you've got a different contribution that doesn't work with GPL, then they can create another instance of the repository, and their ontology crunching tools can use their other software, which will iterate with yours regardless of their software licenses. You're only talking about a set of tools. VI, okay, had license terms. But the fact that VI had license terms did not currently scar the industry of any text. Other people came up with their text editors, arguably, and they were free to do their own, and they were all eventually step creating content. So I'm not as worried. Do we really think there's a huge, vibrant, throbbing bunch of people, all of whom are just waiting to throw something into the stew pot here, and all of them are under six different licenses? We're gonna have a cat fight if we don't include all of them? Is that why we have this draft? Or do we think that we can actually get to a good alpha with something much smaller? Avoid Bruce's problem and not cut off the nose of anybody else who wants to build something else? ?
Good point. Peter here, I agree with you. This is sort of the own set that we thought, we have tried best to mitigate on Bruce's issue. We can take out MIT, we can take out Apache, but it is probably not going to matter that much. And I totally agree with you, although Mike Dean probably would not agree that the key issue is the content and not the technology, because technology is also a very, very key part of this entire initiative. I would say by in terms of weight, they're probably a 50-50 type situation. We care about them equally as much.
I only see Jamie's hand, but Mike, maybe you would like to make a comment on that?
Sure. I was debating what to type in the chat window. So yeah, I think there's a significant balance, between the software infrastructure we're building and the content infrastructure, and 50-50 is probably about right. We really would like to have a platform that people can really contribute to, as far as software tools to use ontologies as well as the ontologies themselves. But I didn't get quite some. I debated whether to raise my hand earlier. A lot of questions there. I think there was some comment about binding ontologies, and I think that a significant use case, but not always an issue. One of the common use cases I see for a ontology repository is making what it used to be called build or buy decisions. Is there an existing ontology that I can reuse versus do I have to build a new one from scratch, in a given area? And in those cases, I think it's mostly a matter of identifying, say, the one or two or ten ontologies that cover a certain area that I'm interested in, and choosing between them rather than necessarily trying to combine pieces. It also gets into some of the federation aspects, and because I think a key decision in choosing between those ontologies is going to be the IPR rights that are associated with them. And in one of the domains, I think it would actually be, again, sort of getting back to the, bill versus buy, I think it would be very useful in terms of the ontology metadata to at least be aware that that commercial ontology, the Getty vocabularies is probably a really good example, covers a given topic. And it might be that in certain situations I would be very willing to actually, if the awareness is important, then I might be willing to actually go out and pay to license those ontologies. So I didn't really raise this issue before, but I think there's a dimension to some of the federation aspects that probably ultimately also needs to be addressed in the IPR policies. And the first, the key is including the licensing terms in the metadata. That's the enabler for everything. But I think then there's then a question of how one would expect what the controls essentially on federation that a given site could enforce would be with respect to the content that they're willing to federate.
Okay, thank you, Mike. Any other comments? No one has their hand raised, but we still have, I think, a lot of issues that perhaps we have not yet resolved.
Peter here. I may ask Bruce and Jamie again, to even allow us to have a code base, and to allow us to eventually default to simplified BSD, we could, take out, let's say, MIT and Apache, for the time being, since we only said compatible and such as and words like that, but not limited to, we could take that out of the verbiage. Does that help? And I know I heard Jamie said already that even the way we have it worded now rather not professional, and I have to agree, but let's say it sort of spells out our desires, and then we can sort of let the lawyers, if we have them, to clean that up. But let's get the concepts right first. Would taking out, and reducing that set to as few number of licenses as possible, would that help?
Fewer is good. That part was easy. For some of the rest of your question, you're putting Bruce or I in a position where we have to play a lawyer on B1. But did I hear you say Apache's not currently anticipated as necessary, Mozilla's not currently anticipated as necessary, but you do currently anticipate identified contributions under BSD and MIT and Eclipse. Is that right?
No. I wish it was that simple. No, we anticipate Mozilla, Eclipse, and we want to default to eventually to simplify BSD. We will try to ask, people who are contributing, since they have as authors, they have the right to do anything they want. I learned this from Bruce. So we will hopefully negotiate with them, and hopefully they will eventually send in their contribution through simplified BSD. MIT is there because thought that we should remove MIT, we could remove Apache.
Yes.
Yeah, so I think you need to do two things here. One is to make a very strong statement that newly contributed work should be under BSD. And then that will mean that some people will say to you, we can't do that. And at that point, you have to analyze whether the license they can contribute under is acceptable. The second thing you need to do is you have to make sure that what you have now actually works legally.
I mean, we would know. I mean, let's say if we have one and only one contribution and it is under a Mozilla license, then at least we know that it will work legally.
Yeah.
Just that anyone else who would...
If you're combining Mozilla and Eclipse, you know, I would want to sit down and read both licenses and make sure they work together and discuss it with an attorney. So if you presently have code under Mozilla and Eclipse.
Not presently, but soon enough. And I guess
presently only have code under MPL.
We presently only have code in MPL.
Yeah, so you have a little precious breathing room here, which you need to preserve and strategize how you're going to preserve that as well as you can, because you will, Peter, be totally overwhelmed by the legal problems if you let this opportunity walk away.
I see Mike Dean's hands up. I mean, he has federated codes that he will be contributing. Maybe he has something to add. I hear you, Bruce, and I hear you with a lot of humility to make sure I don't have to go around.
Mike, do you have a comment?
Peter, you asked specifically about the Federated Code, and I think our intent there is that we can contribute that under whatever licenses is appropriate. So, you know, we'd be happy to contribute it to BioPortal under MPL or you know, certainly the BSD license would be fine. I probably heard something in time. The reason I actually put up my hand partly was the comment about the Apache license, and it struck a thought to me that it might help to address some of the LGPL issues as well, which I'm sympathetic to. And I wonder if there actually might be sort of two classes of software, you know, one of which is really OOR software that people, is the real meat of the functionality and the top level of the functionality and things that people would be changing. And the other thing are libraries that the OOR implementation uses but doesn't expect to change. So one of the examples that kind of made me think of this was something like Lucene could be very useful as an index across the ontology prescription for things. But that we may well want to use, but I certainly wouldn't expect that we would necessarily have to, get Lucene to be contributed under another license to enable that type of usage. And some of the reasoning engines may fit into that category as well, where we just want to use them literally as libraries or dependencies and not as part of the modifiable OOR code base.
Mike, have you put Lucene under a library interpretation here?
Leo, I'm sorry. I'm not hearing that.
Okay. You would put Lucene under the category of a contributed library?
Yeah, or more really a software dependency. Some of the software modules that the repositories would use. Other alt parsers and things like that I certainly would expect to be in that category as well. In fact, I expect BioPortal itself actually is using a lot of component libraries, kind of like Jenna, that probably have different license terms as well. from the code that they've developed.
I see. So, yeah, it's too bad that Mark Newsom's not available because their experience may actually help us some here.
I think that their experience is that it's very confusing and that really actually prompted NCBO to co-organize this mini-series with us. Because, I mean, I don't think anyone, I mean, really knows what they're doing.
I think that's true, but I mean, certainly I wouldn't expect someone to write a new XML parser, you know, for OR just, you know, for IPR reasons. I mean, there's a lot of existing parsers that we should be able to pull in and use.
So I mean, I really thank Mike on bringing up this point about LGPL and thank Adam in sort of asking the question earlier, which I guess is a great time to address now to Adam, is if we add some clause about LGPL, about libraries, library contributions into the policy, does that sort of mitigate some of the concerns you have in terms of working with the team? We definitely need your contribution. I mean, don't get me wrong anywhere. We need your contribution. Would LGPL be the mechanism to help us solve the sort of standoff that we had about reciprocal versus gift licenses?
So I'm not quite sure if I understood. Is are you saying that LGPL you believe would now be acceptable along with your existing license set?
If we put some statement, I mean, this is not my statement. I mean, the whatever is floated now is just a straw man. Hopefully by the end of today, we have something that the general community could buy into. So if we wanted to add, I mean, if we wanted to take out something, we can discuss it and take it out. If we wanted to add something, we could. And adding something about library contribution seems like a great idea, given Rupert and given Mike's point. And obviously we would have to ping Bruce and Jamie again on how to best incorporate that into the policy. If that is what we want.
Well, I guess I'm puzzled. So I thought the earlier assertion was that the LGPL wasn't in fact compatible. So what can you clarify this for me? What happened?
Do you want me to take
that? Yeah, Bruce, could you take that, please?
Yeah, LGPL is designed to be combined with other licenses. So if you are only concerned with combining software, LGPL is acceptable. That said, LGPL has some terms that don't exist in some of the other licenses that we've been considering. For example, the obligation to distribute source code with an executable for the LGPL component, or to have some other mechanism to distribute that source code for a period of 3 years after the executable is distributed. Also, there has to be a way to replace the LGPL code in situ. So we normally, in normal executables, would put the LGPL code in a demand loadable library. So if someone wants to fix a bug in the LGPL code, they can. That is actually required by the license. So we're putting a few requirements on people that did not exist before, but license compatibility is not a problem.
That might say about it.
Mike, do you have your hand raised?
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know it.
Okay. Adam or Peter, any comments?
Well, I guess that just that this sounds promising. We're just floating straw mans, and I'm not sure we've gotten to sort of the ground truth, as it were, on all the details. But certainly if the group feels that from a legal perspective it's possible to include LGPL in the set, then that potentially makes at least all of my software something that could be included. I may not solve the problem, however, for anybody else, but no one else has spoken up right now about this being a problem for their particular potential contribution.
I think that either Bruce or Jamie also mentioned earlier that perhaps our mentioning of the various license frameworks are unnecessary. Is that a correct comment? So that we could reduce what we have in the current straw man? And Peter, correct me if I'm wrong here.
They both agree that reducing the number of licenses would be helpful. I propose that we remove Apache and MIT because, I mean, we don't have immediate contribution lining up at the door saying that they are under Apache and MIT. Although I personally don't think removing MIT would help much. Jamie or Bruce could correct me.
Hi there. Removing MIT would not really change the legal scenery, but it would just mean one less license to evaluate. And MIT is simply redundant if you already have BSD. I don't think there's any legal reason that someone would insist on using MIT rather than BSD.
I think the insistence is, I mean, let's say maybe some researcher from MIT has code to contribute, and, I mean, is paid to write things under the MIT license. And
if he comes in and says he
wants to contribute that under the MIT license, I mean, I guess we'll be happy to take it.
That might be a little simplistic. I think you can wait for that kind of situation to come up before you make it necessary that we absolutely accept the MIT license. I think in general, keeping the set small right now, and if you have to make it big later, you do a legal evaluation and you make it bigger, is probably better than just throwing stuff in to the mix right now because we're not sure.
Could you repeat that again?
I'm sorry. Jamie might explain this a little better, but I think right now if you had a reasonably small set of licenses that were the ones that were required to make the recipe work today, that when people wanted to bring in other licenses, you would at that point do a legal analysis. I think, you know, just throwing in MIT today because of a theory that someone might be constrained to use MIT is probably not correct and, you know, isn't necessary to do until the problem actually happens.
I see Jamie may have a comment.
You need to speak louder.
Very well.
Yeah, this is great.
Okay, two things. First, Bruce, then LGPL. On Bruce's point, and I think I'm just amplifying and agreeing with it, what we're talking about is arbitrage here, okay? Every time you need to find out whether license Aleph actually works with licenses Beth and Dimmel, you're requiring some sweat equity. Some Bruce expert or some lawyer, somebody has to do work. What we're trying to do is reduce the total amount of work in the physics sense of the word. So if the choice is, for example, do we include MIT in the list? Then unless somebody's got a burning piece of anticipated contribution that says, MIT and only MIT, and we won't do anything else. The reason you don't include it is because you're making value judgments. And I'm saying this just to make it clear for the future in similar circumstances, at least casually in a text transcript of a phone conversation. On the one hand, you've got how much effort would it be for us to figure out in design time here in creating the rule whether MIT is close enough to the others that we ought to include it. Okay, there's that agony issue, and there's the who we annoy if we don't include MIT, and there's the is it really the same or not. And, you know, do we do that now, or do we pass that problem off on the person who has the contribution who looks at our requirement of FreeBSD and says, you know what, MIT, FreeBSD, close enough, sure, I'll give it 200 FreeBSD. By pushing it up on the ladder, basically you're making one contributor make the decision. But what you're avoiding is you're avoiding every user of your material from there on, every implementer who's taking advantage of your repository of code. And you're solving the problem so that each one of them doesn't have to, every time they read it, make the same decision. So efficiency is strongly in the direction of fewer licenses that aren't absolutely necessary. Okay, well, maybe more than needed for this one, but that's the calculation you have to make over and over again when you're creating stuff like this. And I think Bruce is absolutely right. Don't increase the number of times that every user has to consider whether a given license is okay any more than you have to. Because there's a lot more of them than there are contributors. Now, LGPL. We have a separate thread here. And that is, should LGPL either be in the candidate list or should it be the candidate list? And all I'm going to say is I suspect it might work, but I wouldn't encourage anybody to pick it up to reach that conclusion about reading it with this in mind, which I doubt could happen during the course of this phone call. So if we want to put it in the possible list and then work towards the shorter list, which we have that in it, I think that means another huddle is required.
Peter here. I guess if we include LGPL, it will be a separate bullet rather than as in sort of appending it to the list of the disk licenses, which it is.
Would it make sense to eliminate that clause about compatible open source licenses include the following, blah, blah, blah?
Yeah, totally.
It makes legal sense. I mean, which Bruce and Jamie is advising us to do, but it also all of a sudden take out our code base. We don't have a code base anymore.
How so?
Because I mean, unless we change Simple FreeBSD to Mozilla, because NCDO or Stanford did not contribute their BioPortal code base under Simple BSD. They contributed it under Mozilla 1.1.
And you're also expecting it to be a necessary element based on your architecture plan for the last 2 years, right?
Right.
So why do you have BSD? Why doesn't your short list say Mozilla and Eclipse, and maybe we'll think about adding LGPL?
No, LGPL is a different animal altogether. We will probably want to add another bullet.
Yeah, I know. Required thought. But why does the previous be in there at all? Let's assume that we're right, that reducing the number is good. What's BSD doing in there?
Because that's eventually what we want everything in. We actually don't want things to eventually be in Eclipse or eventually be in Mozilla. We want things to eventually be in Simplified BSD or MIT. Except that, I mean, Mike and I and Leo talked about it, and I guess BSD has been around much longer than MIT, and so we favored BSD.
So we as Mike and Leo and Peter as your original conclusion, and you've heard nothing to change any of that. Would that be a fair description?
Right, when we drew up the straw man, I mean this is a straw. We don't
right.
railroad this through the community.
Why do you want to build a community? That's a conclusion, Peter. You're
we barely hear you. Maybe talking.
Okay, yeah. What if the whole dang thing ended up under Mozilla and Eclipse, and you guys didn't ever get to your Nirvana state of BSD? Problem or no problem?
I guess FreeBSD matches the vision slightly better. Let's put it that way. Vision being, I mean, keeping things as simple, as free, as open as it possibly can. And I think FreeBSD...
one with the least restrictions.
Right, yes. So that comes closest to the vision.
Jamie, your hand is still raised. Do you want to talk about that? Or okay, Mike?
I'm going back a little bit, but I think that we probably need to have some clause in there in terms of what libraries can be used in addition to what software can be contributed. So I would be very surprised, for instance, if OR does not have some Apache library, make use of some Apache libraries. And that seems like that's a place to put LGPL as well. The other thing is I think there probably needs to be some sort of escape clause here that basically other licenses will be considered on a case-by-case basis or something like that, or some process for revising this list, you know, as necessary.
Brilliant. Mike, could you type that into the chat box so that at least this is documented?
Yeah, both parts?
Yes, it's both parts.
Okay.
Hi, Peter.
Yes.
So what we're saying is that the group needs to evaluate licenses at some point later. It's necessary to use a library under a different license, or it's necessary to accept a contribution under a different license. And what this implies is that you need an IPR committee and an IPR process to convene when this happens.
Which instantiates as what? I mean, we try to get some lawyers into the team so that they could sit down every time someone contributes something that's not already in there.
Yeah, well, the organization needs counsel because, you know, I can't give you legal advice legally, and Jamie is not your counsel, even though he's functioning as counsel here and there. So, you should have your own lawyer, and you should be able to run questions by an attorney up, and what you shouldn't do is just have it that some engineer makes the decision without there being a process where an attorney is consulted, because that's how you get in trouble.
I think we agree. One of the issues is that we're kind of an open voluntary association right now, and we really would require, you know, a volunteer lawyer to participate.
And there are lots of pro bono lawyers, including things like Software Freedom Law Center, which is a whole law firm established to help projects like yours. You just have to make sure that's part of your process.
Thank you, Bruce. And if you have a couple of pointers you can type into the chat screen as well, that would be great.
Yeah, the Software Freedom group, for example, and any others that you may know. Mike, you still have your hand raised here, or?
Sorry, no.
Okay, and let's see, Bruce, do you still have yours raised?
No, I'll put mine down, sorry.
Okay, Jamie, then?
Yeah, I do. I see this conversation as being essentially a client-side conversation, not a lawyer-side conversation. This group is discussing what it needs. For example, it is saying it needs to be able to take in some Eclipse contributions. desires. It desires to get to, you know, a state of nirvana where everything's under a free BSD license or equivalent. And then it's trying to figure out how far it can take this statement of needs and desires out to the public as a proposed policy before invoking that community and the lawyers to look at it and say, well, does this make sense or not? I would expect that some of those people that are mentioned, like the resource center, will have opinions when you vote something that's more concrete. So it seems to me our job here is to get to a, you know, get to an alpha to allow that to be floated. Whether that actually involves engaging lawyers or not is a problem I think you can save for one pass of feedback from the broader audience that's sitting around. What I really hope to avoid, as a type, is a situation where the terms are confusing enough that contributors will continually feel that they have to reach for their lawyer every time they think about whether to send something or not. That does not lead to the kind of robustness that you probably want.
Yeah, I think that, for example, we would invite Adam's contribution. And so, you know, the LPGL standard could either be included in our straw man or, you know, perhaps some of these removed and just, you know, declared to be compatible or implicitly assumed to be compatible. I don't know which tax group is actually better. Comments?
We are about like 10, just 15 minutes to the end, so we better move on to discuss two of the very major things that we haven't even touched upon. One is on the content, if we want to talk through those a little bit more, but evidently since ontologies can be executed and a lot of it sort of overlaps the software discussion just now, that which makes it good. But we also needed to talk the positions. No patents for ontologies and no patents for software as discussion, and then maybe talk about the follow-up.
Yeah, given that we have less than, what, maybe 10 minutes, maybe we should address the candidate position statement. That might be easier.
Mm-hmm.
Does everyone agree with these? And just to highlight, I think that the slide 11 will seek optional endorsements by individual members of the communities involved as a joint community organizing this effort. Therefore, we believe ontologies are fundamental to enabling interoperability and so support the position ontologies should not be patentable. And then also that patents covering software will discourage rather than encourage innovation. And therefore, we support the position that software should not be patentable. So would there be any objections currently?
I posted some, as you may know, from the email stream.
Yeah. I'm certainly more comfortable with the first than the second. And
that's Mike?
Yeah.
This is Jamie. Essentially, to save you a bunch of email reading, what I posted was this. That's the software, that's the second. I think there's a lot of other people chasing that one, and I'm not sure that having folks here put their energy into a statement from this group would be the optimal way to support that goal, if that is your goal. I think it's kind of distracting from the ontology expertise focus here, so I don't think it gets anything. On the first, which is ontology being patentable, my takeaway from listening remotely after that to the last session, and other things I know is that the patentability of ontology is still kind of a messy, interesting, difficult subject, and to simply say they should not be doesn't actually contribute much we should be working on arguments why they aren't. There are ways to defend against it or scheme up for dealing with it or mediating it. Just say it should not be falls into the class of I want a pony, and I don't think it gets us anything.
Okay. Let's see. Jamie, do you have your hand raised here?
That would be Fox's one, no.
Oh,
yeah, it's first. I had my hand raised. I think it's always nice to have the sentiment, especially when there are meetings at places like NIH where we can call up that sentiment and use it to make a point. But I think that right now it's just a sentiment. Unfortunately, we're not making much headway on this issue, and it's still nice to see people helping us by putting their own force behind it. The second issue is ontologies versus software. So you're clear that you can say ontology shouldn't be patentable. Should software be patentable? Let's reframe that to should we be prevented from carrying out our open source project by someone else's patent? And I think the reality is that the open source software that you release will exercise claims in someone's current software patent because all non-trivial software does. And I think that's a problem, and I think it's all right for an open source project to say, hey, look, if the law is enforced totally, we'd not be giving you software, and that's a problem.
Okay. Yeah, this is an interesting perspective. I don't know if we can resolve this then. There seems to be some question about, first of all, the value of even asserting these petition statements. And the second one in particular may be something that we should not exclusively make, according to, I think Jamie made that comment. So where does that leave us?
Peter here. I thank Jamie for the suggestion about substantiating our position. And if I type onto the chat board, we could start a wiki page and start to build out that position with all the proper substantiation. I think that part is easier, and obviously this group has a lot more expertise on ontology than other things like legal issues or even software. But the point, I think Bruce is correct, and the reason why we wanted to bring up that second position is that without that second position properly covered, I think we are compromised altogether. And John Stoller just showed us how. I mean, you can have someone come up and say they patent everything that you could put ontologies into a digital storage, and all of a sudden building an ontology repository becomes illegal, or not illegal, at least if you have to pay somebody to even build your OOR.
So I
think those two positions are related.
The elephant in the living room with open source. And I always get told by lawyers, don't even discuss the fact that open source infringes patents. Okay? It does. It's always gonna. What do we do about that?
Yeah, good question.
We don't know what we want to do. I mean, making statements, at least statements that a community or at least enough people from the community would are willing to endorse helps at least put up the voice, a voice. And I think Andy, who says that John Wilbanks told us that they are going to publish further on this point. And when I say we, I actually am not limiting ourselves to the OR team or even the Ontolog community, but when we say we, I'm more talking about the people who co-organized this entire effort. That means NCBO, Creative Commons, Oasis, as well.
Pushback from your institutions. I've certainly gotten pushback from the universities where I've worked.
If we don't float it, we wouldn't find out.
We'd appreciate the help.
Okay, so that looks like, I mean, that's probably all we have time for. So maybe back to Leo.
What do we do next?
Okay, folks, we don't really formally have a consensus. We're going to be having some entry on the wiki pages that Peter has suggested, and it's going to be open for comment among the OOR community for at least a week and perhaps even longer. I'm not sure what constitutes consensus. Except that we don't want to go around necessarily and raise our hand in a vote, but we want to converge on a kind of implicit consensus, if you will, where there's no major objections. And I'm not sure if we're there yet. I think our discussion today, many issues have been raised, so perhaps the next thing to do is to revise this straw man and then invite comments. Any other input, folks?
So I see maybe three different action items. We revise the straw man, and in particular at the library thing, possibly maybe remove Apache from the compatible software, but adding a bullet about libraries and putting Apache library and LGPL library in under that bullet. That's number one. Number two is to start a page to get ourselves bulked up on supporting a position on no patent for ontology. The third thing is to, I guess, float the idea of whether the community would object to maybe at least raising that on the position of no software patents on a page and allowing people to freely sign up their endorsement or not. Of course, if there's serious objection to even putting that up, then we would refrain from that. And if we don't have serious objections, then the endorsements are up to the individuals. Would that be okay?
Yeah, that seems reasonable. Do we want to make what was brought up, I think, by Jamie and Bruce was maybe the free software, Freedom Resource Center. Do we want to
you know, have an action item to contact them or consider contacting them?
Oh, yes. Okay, I'll add to the that status of four action items.
It's something that probably we'll have to do eventually anyway, so. Okay. I thank everyone for your contributions and participation today. Is there any other final comments? Okay. Well, thank you all. I guess we'll adjourn then today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, and bye-bye.
Peter, it's the Software Freedom Law Center is the name of the organization. Sorry about that. And have a good day, everyone.
Okay. Thank you.
Good.